like I said, like we've offered to be bought now 4 times, and the 4th time was the only time I actually considered it. And I talked about it to the Sunday Business Post before. Like, it was a deal for €1 million. It was like a really good deal. It was in black and white, the €1 million offer. It was there. And there was a lot of good things about it. There was bad things about it. I was really confused whether I wanted to do it or not. But I remember kind of there was a fall in negotiations towards the end. And one of the things was, without saying too much because it's an NDA and stuff, but it's one of the things had to do with how the money was going to be paid out. And I had said something on one of our conference calls like, oh, well, like I want to buy a house, so I need this by then or blah, blah. And I remember the guy in the deal trying to buy my business was like... Since when, like, does a 28-year-old girl need to buy her a house for herself? And I was literally like, are you fucking kidding me? Yeah. Giving it with their job, or they're unhappy in their relationship, or they don't like their apartment. And I'm like, just move, or just... you know, leave your job or move to a new house. Like, the simple answer is just do it. Like, I don't know how else to say it. So that's just the way I've literally lived my life. But it definitely changed when I read The Secret. My mom gave me The Secret when I was about 17 or 18. I just finished secondary school and I didn't get the Leaving Cert points that I wanted, and I was just really down. I'd had like a massive breakup. My parents had also just split up and I got diabetes. It was like a really bad summer. It was really bad. And I read The Secret and something just switched and I was just like, oh my god. Now, I did always feel similar thoughts to what's in The Secret, but when it was actually down in black and white, when it literally was like, anything you want in life you can get, anything you visualize will come to being, when I actually saw it in writing, I was like, this is going to change everything. And it actually did. It changed my whole life, that book. And it's not that the book itself, every single page I related to or I believed, it's just it got me thinking about things differently and
from like, a different perspective.
And even like the fact that you have moved to New York, okay, like there's probably thousands of other girls who have thought about moving to New York, who've thought about giving up their job, but they just have been too scared. And I think when some people ask, like, how did you do this or how did you find the motivation to that? Everyone is scared. Like, no one is like, oh, grand, I'm going to give up my career and move to a country where I know nobody. Same with me. Like, I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to leave my really well-paying job. I had, like, just one Showbiz Journalist of the Year. I was, like, doing so well in the newspaper industry. So the thoughts of setting up Goss, as amazing as the idea was, there was obviously a huge part of me was like, oh my God, is this going to be like the biggest mistake? Because I'm walking away at the age of 23 from this like unreal job. I've just won this award. Like, I had everything I wanted. My own family were like, what are you doing? This is insane. Like, you've health insurance paid for it. Like, you have your life sorted. So yeah, I don't know if it's something you're just born with or something you train yourself to do, but it is definitely that idea of you just have to do it. I feel like I'm doing an ad for Nike. Just do
just
it.
Just go and do it. No, I read The Secret as well, and I think it's 100% something that you can train yourself to do. Is like, even for example, the podcast, right? Like, I was like, I want to start a podcast. Did I ever have training in podcasting? Absolutely no way. Like, I just literally bought the equipment and started it and was like, how to start a podcast. Googled that and figured it out, you know, like, and it doesn't make me like, maybe my podcast will be the worst podcast out there, but it just means that I've gone and I've started it. And it just is an example of how to do things, you know, versus like sitting back and wait and thinking, you know, can I or should I?
You visualized and you got it. Like, so I used to be really into mood boards and I'm about to get back into it now because I did a kind of mood board / bucket list thing in my diary. So I have like been journaling since I was like 6 years old. I have diaries my whole life. Like, I always have.
Same. I've never heard anybody say, I'm the same.
Really?
Like, I would write like the stupidest things in there, but they evolved and I just constantly always kept like a diary, and I'd fill them like
Oh yeah, and with stupid stuff, fancying a boy in class or like whatever, missing your friends. It's mad. And my mom sold our family home there last year, and I had to clear out my room, and I found all the diaries. Like there's literally 15 of them. But with the diary now, what I do once a year is I kind of have these two pages where it's like bucket list of things I want to achieve, what I want to do, and then also I kind of draw out things I want. So like as an example, like about 3 years ago, I had like, I want a white car, a white Jeep, and I want to get it. Like, this is one of the things I had. I drew the keys or whatever. I kind of forgot about it. And then I became an ambassador for Toyota, and they were like giving me the car, and they were like sending me what I was going to be getting. And they were like, it's a Jeep, you can pick the color. And I was like, oh, I think I'm going to go for white. And then I remember the day that I got it, and I looked at the keys, and the keys were like the exact same thing I'd drawn in my diary that day. And I was like, holy shit. Like, that is how clear it can be sometimes. If you genuinely put it in writing, or you draw it and you believe it's going to happen, it really, really does.
Yeah. And I think what I used to do is, and I still do it, is I write a list of goals in the back of the diary, like in the back page. And then I start at the front, obviously, and fill it with like whatever that might be in there. But, and even like one that I wrote at Christmas, I think I went back and I was like, oh, what were my goals like then? And I went back and I was like, okay, that's done, that's done. Like, these things are done. Like, it is crazy. But I think one of the things that issues people have with The Secret is that, oh, like if you visualize it, like it'll happen. That's not the point. Isn't just thinking of, like, the point is,
yeah, you have to work towards it.
Yeah, the point is to actually get your head in the mindset of like, exactly, okay, this is what I want. I've decided what I want, and now I'm going to figure out in my head and with my actions how I'm going to get there. And that's what the point is. It's not to say like, oh, if I just think about it enough,
it's
like
going to happen. Yeah, yeah, this like is the thing. Like, I remember when I was working in the Herald for like a year, it's coming up on a year, and I'd always said to myself I was going to give myself a year there, because it was a really, really tough job. Like, it was crazy hours. I'd be up from 5 a.m. like every day, and I had kind of always visualized, when it gets to a year, I'm going to find something else. And literally the day I was there a year, the day, I got a text from someone in the mail on Sunday, and I had to do like all these different interviews, and the final interview was with like the head of the whole mail group, and he kind of was like, you're 23. Like, I think I was 22 turning 23. I was going to be the youngest person in there by at least 10 years. He just couldn't believe anything I was saying. He just didn't believe that I was going to be able to do the things I was going to be able to do. And I remember I asked for more money than what they gave me initially. And I was like, this is what I deserve. Like, this is what I want. And he was like, if you can do what you're saying you're going to do in 6 months' time, I'll give you the raise that will bring you to that money, right? So he wouldn't give it to me. He was like, I need to see you do it. And I was like, in my mind again, visualizing, I'm going to get that money, I'm going to be able to do this. And our final interview had been in Residence. Do you know Residence on Stephen's Green? It's called Now. But 6 months later, again, to the week, I was on my way back from the Four Seasons after winning Showbiz Journalist of the Year, the youngest person to ever win the award. And me and him were back in the same room in Residence. And I was like, 6 months ago, you literally said, can you talk, but I don't know if you can walk the walk. So that's another thing, exactly, right? I didn't sit on my ass for 6 months. During those 6 months, I visualized what I wanted. I wanted to get that money. I wanted to win that award. So I worked really hard. So yeah, I do agree with you. And the other part about The Secret that people don't like is that it can be quite negative, because it says, you know, if you think negative thoughts, you're attracting negativity. And then people get paranoid, like, oh my God, if I have a bad day, am I going to die? But like, I actually am a very up and down person. Like, I can have really, really bad patches and be quite negative. So that's not the case. Like, it's not that like if you have a negative thought, your whole life is over. Like, you can have bad days, but definitely, I don't know about you, but definitely if I have a bad day and things are going wrong, everything will go wrong. So I do believe the more, whatever mindset you're in, more of that will come to you, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And you'll kind of think about things in a different way if you're depending on your mindset. But I relate to that so much. Like, I'm so up and down. Like, I'll have days where I'm just like, everything is over, like I'm done. Like, and then other days I'll get up and be like, the world is my oyster. Like, it's so varied. Like,
no, I'm the exact same. It's such a bizarre way to be, but it also is why we're probably both so driven and ambitious. But yeah, like, especially with what's going on at the moment, like with coronavirus, like I'm a really visual person. Like, if you said to me, like, I want you to, like, this time next year have the most successful shoe shop in Ireland, like, no problem, done. Like, if I can visualize it, it will happen. But what's happened in the last few months, I think, with a lot of people, not just me, is, like, I'm starting to visualize the future and I'm coming up with blank. It's like there's nothing. It's like a wall. Yeah. And it's taken me, honestly, the last 3 months to get over that. Only really in the last week, I've been like, no, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. But for the first while, I just literally could not see a future. I was like, even just personally, not even about the business, like with the business, I've actually been working on it even more than I have in the past. But with myself, I was like, how am I going to meet somebody? How am I going to see my friends? How am I going to socialize? Like, am I going to get left behind? Because, you know, like, I'm a type 1 diabetic, so I'm really high risk for the coronavirus. So I've been staying in quite a lot. So I've had all these worries the whole time. But it's really been the last week where I've started being like, I'm going to be able to do this. I'm going to see this person. This is going to happen. You just have to kind of tell yourself that good things are going to happen. And it does sound a bit kind of hocusy pocusy, I know, to some people, but I really think that's the best. Like, life is so short. What's the point sitting around every day being upset, being worried, and accepting a mediocre life? And that's what I was talking about earlier on about taking risks. A lot of unhappy people, like even trolls, internet trolls, or like people I've had run-ins before with online or whatever, I always kind of look into them and realize, like, these are people that are not happy with their lives. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't take the risk, they didn't book the flight to New York, they didn't start the company they wanted, and now they're in this like mediocre life and they just can't.
All right, yeah, no, I was gonna say, like, the misconception about going for it, or, you know, the whole visualization, or take the misconception around taking a risk, or, you know, you started your business and somebody else did something else, is that you think that you're better than somebody else, or that you have different skills than somebody else, or that you have different abilities. And like, I don't know if you'll agree with me on this, but like, I just believe that, like, we just choose to do what we want to do. And like, yeah, we have skills and different things. Like, some people can sing a song, some people can read music, some people can, you know, drive cars really well. I don't know what it would be, but like, I feel like if you have if you're gravitating towards something like being a business owner or doing something specific, that you likely have skills in that area, and it's up to you to kind of like
to utilize them.
Yeah. And to make the decisions around them to say, yeah, that is what I'm going to do, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, look, everyone has a skill set, and there is a misconception out there that, you know, like, for example, I always think of, like, you know, Richard Branson, he didn't even finish school. Like, there's a lot of people that didn't finish school that have become entrepreneurs. So the whole argument that, like, you're better than someone else, it actually doesn't even make sense, because people will do with limited skill. It's all down to you making a decision. Like you just said, it's not that you're better than someone or someone's worse than you. Everyone has the potential to do everything. Like, even with like Hollywood actors and stuff, you know, you always hear the stories where like everyone said I wasn't going to make it, and I was sleeping in my car and I was waiting tables. Like, the reason they got to where they is because they slept in their car and they waited tables. Like, think of all the other actors that want to be in Hollywood movies, that want to be acting along Leo DiCaprio, but they don't want to wait tables and they don't want to live in their car. So like, you have to be willing to put yourself out there. And like, the same with you going to New York, like setting up Goss was not easy. And there has been times in the last 6 years that have been incredibly difficult, where I've literally been like, should I just walk away? Like, it's been that bad. I've been like, the whole thing feels like it's in tatters. Have I made like such a mistake? Is it time? And I've never done it. And I remember there was one meeting where a company were trying to buy us out, and it was like a group of men, of course, in like a boardroom. And I remember I walked out at the end, because they were like, oh, like, we can buy you. They were offering way below what I wanted. And they were like, we could buy you, we could give you a salary, you know, we'll help you out. Kind of like, we got you, we'll sort you. And I was like, I don't think you understand. Like, I will live in my car to make sure that Goss is still going. Like, this is my whole life. And they were so surprised that I wasn't in it just for money, or that I didn't just want a quick sale. So I've never actually genuinely considered leaving it, walking away from it before. But I think people need to understand that. I think they see people online and they think they're really wealthy, or they think their life is amazing. Like, running a business, I can't explain to you in words what the actual pressure is like. Going to sleep knowing that you are responsible for all your staff to get paid, that you're going to sleep that all your legal stuff is on you, that all your taxes are returned, that as a website that legally we've made the right decisions, that we need to organize an event and people aren't showing up that are meant to, or are someone that was meant to do the decorations is just pulled out. Like, going to sleep and having that all on your shoulders is life-changing. Like, it's not easy at all, and you have to have this constant get up and go. And like, I have lots of friends that are like multi-millionaires, billionaires, like they run way bigger companies than me, and they tell me the same thing. They still, to this day, they're making millions, they have sleepless nights because they were like, that never goes away, because you always have to worry, and you'll always be worried about money, you'll always be worried about your staff, it doesn't go away. So the choice to start a business is such a big one, and I'm always telling people, you need to be ready to do that. So it does annoy me sometimes, the way you were saying there, that some people get that perception that you think you're better than everyone else, because I would love to switch my life with that person who says that for one day, because I'm telling you, by the end of that day, they'd be like, God bless you for putting up with what you do. Like, I could never do it. And I think people would actually feel sorry for me if they knew what it was like.
No, yeah, true. I think people would, like, the things, anything that I've done successfully or well, you know, so far in my life, or that I'm proud of, the things that have taken to get to that point, people would be like, nah. Like, I've had, one of the most common things that is always said to me is like, is why would you put up with that? Or why like, it's not worth it. Why would you do that? And I'm just like, well, that's just the difference. It, to me, and there's a quote, it takes what it takes. Like, it doesn't, it's all relative to the sacrifice you want to make. Like, I could have packed in New York, you know, packed in New York two visas ago, but yet I sacrificed more, and I did more to get another visa, and I did more to get another visa, and I made the decision not to give up. But it's like, it takes what it takes. So it's like, you want 80% of success, or you want 40%, or you want 100%, or whatever it might be, your sacrifices are also going to be, you know, in like the same, it's going to be more sacrifice for more success, basically.
Oh, and sacrifice is the word. Like, the first newspaper job I had, like, my family were always like against me going into media in general, right? Because I'm really sensitive, I'm real softy, and they were like, how are you going to deal with this? But I remember the first job was so stressful. So I had the craziest hours. I ended up having to like work from home for like 7 months out of the year, and I was driving myself crazy. I had to go out really late at night to nightclubs, following celebrities around, getting stories like until 3 o'clock in the morning. And then I had like one manager in place that just did not like me. He used to ring me at 5 a.m. and scream down the phone. And I remember my family would ring me, being like, how are you? And I would just bawl crying. And they were like, why are you doing this? And I was getting to a point where I was like, I'd actually work in a chipper at this point. I'm so sick of this. But I had a plan. I was like, I'm going to do 12 months here. It was always my plan. And I knew I'd be really well respected after doing this particular job if I stuck to it for the year. But I remember one night or one morning, one of my managers rang me at like 6 a.m. and was screaming in the phone and called me like the C word. And my then boyfriend was lying beside me.
Oh my God.
Oh no, like, it was really bad. And my boyfriend at the time, he heard him say it to me, and he took the phone off me and he went to scream in the phone. I hung up the phone and he was like, why the hell are you in this job? Why are you putting up with this? It's so wrong. Now, obviously now, Stephanie, like, those things wouldn't happen between like the Me Too movements and everything being social. But back then it wasn't like that, you know, like I just had to take what I had to take. But then obviously then I got the next job and I moved out of that. And the time I spent there has stood to me and it made me more resilient. Now, obviously it was completely wrong what happened. But just like what you're saying there, people want the easy route. Like, they want to set up an Instagram account tomorrow and become Ireland's next big influencer. They don't understand about the sweat and tears. And like, I remember even talking before Rob Kenny, he's an influencer in Ireland, but also really big in the PR world. We had him in for this thing we had called the Goss Course. And I remember he was telling our students just about PR, and he was like, internships are so important. And everyone was kind of like, oh, I don't know, you know, free work. And he was like, no, like, they really lead you into what the career you're going to be in. And he told the story about how he was at London Fashion Week on one of his first internships. And he was so tired. He'd been working like 18 days, and he was on the floor packing like envelopes into bags, and his fingers were like bleeding so badly with paper cuts. And he asked, could he like go home? And they were like, if you go home, don't come back. And he was like, fine. So he stayed there. So that obviously sounds mental, but now he has his own agency. He's working with these top jobs. So I'm not saying those things are right. And like the bad situations like that, like when I started Goss, I was like, I will never, ever have my staff like upset like that. But it does kind of create a resilience in you going through bad things and facing bad things. So now obviously I wouldn't have anyone screaming at me or stuff like that, but there would be things that go on in business. Like I can't even count the amount of times we've nearly been sued. Like I've had so many lawsuits threatened. Like it's all the time.
Really? Like,
yeah, all the time. Like when I first started Goss, two other publications tried to sue me within the first week, and I literally was in this like teeny tiny office. I was only paying like €500 a month for it. I had like the crappiest laptop, didn't even have a Mac, and these huge media companies tried to sue me.
Yeah. And what kind of things have you learned about, so I want to go back to you're saying going to sleep at night and kind of having that all on your shoulders. How do you like eventually fall asleep? Like how have you managed that over? Because you launched Goss in 2014.
Yeah, so we just turned 6 like 2 weeks ago, which is crazy.
It's mad.
Yeah, it's up and down. Like I don't always sleep, I won't lie. Like I've had sleepless nights. But to be honest, in the last 2 years, a kind of calm has just come over me. And it's because so many crazy things happened or nearly happened that now when something happens, I don't worry about it. And it's funny because even like the girls on the team, like something might happen out of nowhere. Like maybe on the lead up to the Gossies, like trophies were meant to order, the wrong ones arrived. Like that happened last year, and it was like 3 days before the Gossies, and everyone was freaking out, and I was like, oh, we'll sort it, we'll be grand. And they were like, what? And it's funny, like Kendra, she's like my number two in the business, she's the editor of the site, she said like one of the biggest things she's learned from me is that like everything is going to be okay. So like she would have seen over the years, because she's been with me for 4 years, she would have seen over the years like something mental happen, and then I've always been able to just be like sort it out. So everything has a solution, and I think when you understand that, that's what makes you kind of calm down. So like let's say we're coming up to the end of the month when payroll is going through, and we've a massive deal coming in that's going to pay the wages and pay the rent, and all of a sudden the deal is pulled. Like that has happened multiple, like I actually could not tell you how many times that's happened. It's happened so often, but because it's happened so many times, I always know what to do and how to figure it out, and we just get sales from somewhere else, and you just have to face it head on. And then I suppose going to sleep about, you know, knowing the staff have to be paid and all that stuff, one of the biggest things I've learned over the last 2 years is just making really difficult but like intelligent business decisions. So like even when COVID-19 started, pretty much straight away, I was like, I'm going to let the office go. I just knew this was going to happen for a few months. I knew that there was going to be social distancing requirements. And like the way the Goss HQ is laid out, like I have my own area and then there's a production area, and then the girls kind of all sit together. So I was like, well, that's not possible. But the idea of having to let go an office when like we've had an office for 6 years and it's always been on Leeson Street, like we've been there since the beginning, like we were there the day the Starbucks opened, but I just had to make that choice, and it was really difficult, and I was really upset. Like I cried about it, I didn't sleep about it, more of like the stigma of having to not have an office. But I was like, I'm going to be paying for this office until we go back, which could be next January. So number one, it's a waste of money. Number two, I don't know when I'm going to be back into the office because the diabetes and the coronavirus, I'm too scared. So there was all these things, and I was like, this is the right thing to do. And it sounds like probably not a big deal, but the reason I'm saying sometimes you just have to make tough decisions. It was like, if I was still paying the rent there at the moment, I'd probably be sleeping worse at the minute, because I'd be like, we have to make rent every month. So that's a cost that's now gone. And to be honest, we're actually doing really good at the moment. Like things are booming. So thankfully it's all worked out. But there was a few weeks at the beginning of this, like every single campaign was cancelled. Every single one. Ones that were booked in. Yeah. Ones
like
were booked
kind of
in for
all
months.
At once, or was it just like a domino effect?
Yeah, over about the space of 3 days. And we had a few invoices due from the end of February, and they were all delayed because the coronavirus was kind of kicking off then. And there was a few companies that were delayed, and they were talking about the coronavirus being the reason. And we were like, look, it's fine, we'll sort it out. So pretty much half our invoices from February weren't paid. And then every single campaign in March was cancelled. So when that happened, obviously, I was like, oh my God, right, what are we going to do? And, you know, I run the business on my own. So it's like, I say we, but it's like me by myself trying to figure out, right, how am I going to sort this whole thing out? But we did, and we got there, and I did sort it out, and I did fix things. But yeah, it's hard to put into words, like, but those few weeks I found really difficult at the start because I felt like such a failure. Even though, and I remember saying to my mom, I was like bawling on the phone to her, and I was like, I'm going to have to let the office go. We've lost all these campaigns. And she was like, yeah, but Ali, like every single company in the world is going through this. And I was like, yeah. It doesn't matter. This is me. This is my business. Like I've built this up and now it's all crumbling in front of me. Now I knew we were always going to be fine long term. It was in this moment. I was like, I actually can't deal with this.
Let it go, kind of like.
Yeah, it was just really hard to accept when you don't see campaigns going that you've worked on. Like it is, it's really tough. And we had to make some tough decisions at the very beginning, but I always knew that things were going to get back up again, because at the end of the day, we're an advertising revenue model, and all the big businesses that are starting to reopen, all the brands that are selling online, everyone needs advertising. So I knew it was going to be maybe a tough 2 months and that we'll be back again. And that is basically what happened. But you have to make tough decisions during that time. And I was really upset. And this is the thing, when you were speaking about earlier, how sometimes people have preconceptions of people in business, and in particular women in business, there's a lot of preconceptions like she's a bitch, she's stuck up, she thinks she's amazing, she thinks she's unreal. If you actually look up the term imposter syndrome, it's literally what every single entrepreneur I've ever met has. And it's this belief that you're a fake and you're going to get caught out and you're not actually equipped to do what you're doing. And it's all a lie. Yeah.
I know it all too well, Ali.
And this is the thing. I think generally people wouldn't believe that, but it's probably my biggest downfall is how bad I have it. Like I do sometimes really think I'm a complete fraud. I'm going to be found out. It's all a lie. But then as I've gone through the last couple of years, the more business people I meet, and I'm talking like billionaire entrepreneurs, they literally have imposter syndrome too. And they're making millions a month and they're still like, I'm going to be caught out. I'm going to be found out. So it's just this thing that people have. It's the weirdest thing, because you could be like the CEO of like the best operating company in the world. Like Mark Zuckerberg, he could have imposter syndrome for all we know. It's this really weird self-doubt that's always there, but in a way it kind of drives you.
And do you think that like you've become more calm in the last couple of years because you've become more numb, or you just seen yourself pick up the pieces so many times?
Yeah, it's not the numb thing. You definitely still feel it. It's more that you've seen yourself pick up all the pieces. Like we had Marissa Carter, you know very well, obviously, on the podcast at the start, and we were talking about business. And I said to her, I was like, I know this sounds so strange, but I feel like if someone walked into this room right now and shot one of us in the face, we would be fine. We'd literally be like, oh, right. And we'd figure it out. And she laughed and she was like, yeah, like there's this weird thing when so many crazy things happening, whether it's a threat of something bad happening, so it's you worrying about it, or it's actually something that's happened, when you see the other side of it, which is it works out, you do start building up this courage and this belief that everything can be worked out. And that is what I feel, and it's one of the things that people would say I'm probably too positive, I'm not realistic enough, but I genuinely don't think there's any problem in the whole world that doesn't have a solution, especially when it comes to business or when it comes to your personal life. Like there is an answer. Like sometimes the answers aren't easy, but like there is an answer to everything. So if something really horrific happens or we lose a big deal, instead of going to bed and crying my eyes out about it, I just get practical and I'm like, okay, well, how am I going to fix this? What am I going to do? Is there someone I can ring that's been through this? Like, should I talk to them? Should I figure this out myself? Like, and it's not always easy. Like definitely at the very start, the first year or two, like there was times where people's wages were late. Like they were days late, campaigns were late. And I was like, God, but all of that was like a learning curve. So yeah, I've learned quite a lot, and I am still really calm about the most mad things. And Kendra does say it to me sometimes, like even this year for the Gossies, like we went to the biggest venue ever, which is the Mansion House. And she had actually suggested going to see it, but then when we found out like the prices and the work and how much was involved, it was going to be the most expensive awards we've ever put on. And we had to really hope that certain people were going to show up, that it would be worth the money and that we'd get the right brand deals and that it would all be worth it. But like I think someone else in my position probably wouldn't have chosen the mansion house. They would have gone somewhere else and they would have gone for the safer option. But that is the difference between me and you and a lot of other people is that I don't do the safer option. Like, I'll always put my neck on the line. But like, it was so worth it. And everyone was like, that was the best Gossies you've ever done. And now we're always going to do it there, I would say. But so sometimes,
yeah, it's a risk, isn't it?
It's such a risk. And even like, yeah. I've been going to the Oscars now for like 7 years, like Oscars week, to all the parties. And I remember the first year I went, it was just an idea. I was working in the mail. I was like, I want to go over. I went to my MD. I was like, will you fly me to LA? I will sort the parties. I will get into everything. And I had no contacts there. And I was like, I will sort it out. And I did. I got into everything. And then I just got a relationship with people over there. So I go back and forth all the time. But even still now, like this year, I flew over by myself. I was there for 3 weeks, staying on my own, went to parties. Like, I have loads of friends over there now, don't get me wrong. But like, it's still, it takes a certain type of person to be able to fly somewhere like that and be by yourself for 3 weeks and just try to get into parties and hope that things are going to work out and get sponsorship for the whole coverage. And just, again, it's always a risk. Like, I don't think there's anything in this industry particularly that isn't a risk, because there is no, I think you know this as well, like, depending on the job obviously, but there's no real steady paycheck. There's no job security, whether you own a business or you're just in this business, like showbiz, yeah, marketing, PR. It's not an easy industry, either as like acting, singing, anything that's kind of in the arts, that's artistic or creative. You're taking a massive risk.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always going to be a massive risk, and being reliant on advertising spend is like a huge, yes, you know, it's a huge deal, because there's so much that can affect ad dollars, really, like, aka like the coronavirus.
Yeah, this has really shown people. And this is the thing, when this all happened, like, to be honest, I knew we were going to be okay. Even though I had my few crying days, I was like, it's actually going to be fine. And I kind of knew that we were actually probably going to come out of this better, which we kind of are, which is strange. But one of the things about this is, any company that's left when this is over, like, still there in the rubble, like, they're the companies that are going to be the strongest. Like,
I think what age were you when you first started Goss?
I just turned 24.
Yeah, I was going to say 25. But how do you get people, like, from that such a young age, and even now, like, you're obviously still very young, to take you so seriously with these big brand deals or the decisions that you're going to make, and to be a young female in business as a CEO? Do you find you come up against some issues with people taking you seriously, or do you kind of have that, like?
Oh, definitely. Handled? Like, I really think there's such a gender inequality problem in the world and in this industry, and I don't think I realized how bad until I owned my own company. It's still here now. I was actually speaking to someone this morning about how we didn't get a deal, and it's literally because a certain CEO and another CEO golfed together. And I was literally like, are you actually kidding me? 6 years in, we have the stats, we have the proof, and we're losing out because two guys hang out. That is, yeah, what happens all the time. It's so difficult. It's actually funny. It's kind of worked backwards in a way. So when Goss first started, like I said, I had like just one Showbiz Journalist of the Year, maybe 6 or 7 months before that. So in the industry, I was really highly thought of at the time. And that is, yeah, one of the reasons why I set up Goss. Like, I was worried that maybe brands wouldn't work with us or celebrities wouldn't take us seriously. But pretty much from the second we launched, everyone supported us. Like, Nicky Byrne mentioned it on 2FM. I sold our first takeover the day we launched. We had a takeover with Revlon. And I remember Emma Stone was like the face of Revlon at the time. So like, all of the site was like Emma with this lipstick. And I was like, holy shit, this is nuts. And everyone was like so impressed. Everyone was like, oh my God, you have a site takeover with Revlon. All these celebrities are sharing your website. So we were actually taken seriously really, really fast, funnily enough, because of, I suppose, the reputation from a journalist perspective. But on the business side of things, it's been incredibly difficult. And I would never like blame gender for anything, but I know for a fact there's been situations where we've lost out on something because, you know, these lads go out together or they get brought on golf trips. And it's just not the same when you have a female CEO trying to get a deal with these bunch of guys that are in their 20s. It's like, yeah. So that is something I still find difficult. And I think there is a massive imbalance in the advertising industry, gender wise. So the key decision maker is in a lot of these companies are men still. And a lot of the key decision makers in female focused websites, believe it or not, are also men.
Yeah. So we're changing that.
We're changing it. But like we're literally the only website in the country, the only media company in the country that is all female led. There is no other media company to, I suppose, our size. I know there's a few smaller websites that are all girls, but if we compare us to like our competitors, like the leading like news media websites, none of them are run by women. And they may have female editors, but you know, the board of directors, they're largely male. And it's something that I really think needs to change going forward. And like I said, like we've offered to be bought now 4 times. And the 4th time was the only time I actually considered it. And I talked about it to the Sunday Business Post before. Like it was a deal for $1 million. It was like a really good deal. It was in black and white, the €1 million offer. It was there. And there was a lot of good things about it. There was bad things about it. I was really confused whether I wanted to do it or not. But I remember kind of there was a fall in negotiations towards the end. And one of the things was, without saying too much because it's an NDA and stuff, but it's one of the things had to do with how the money was going to be paid out. And I had said something on one of our conference calls like, oh, well, like I want to buy a house, so I need this by then or blah, blah. And I remember the guy in the deal trying to buy my business was like, since when like does a 28-year-old girl need to buy a house for herself? And I was literally like, are you fucking kidding me? Yeah. And I literally walked away like right after that. I was just like, how much work do I have to do? How many award shows, how many New York Times articles, Mail Online articles need to credit my business for you to take me fucking seriously? Like it just annoyed me so much. And it is because I'm a girl, and maybe the age is in there as well, but he would never have said that to a man.
To a man who was much, like a little bit older, say.
Never.
He would never have said that.
And I've found
To a man, a 28-year-old man. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
And like in other discussions, things like that hadn't happened. It was kind of a throwaway comment, but it really affected me. And I was just like, how is this still the way that people think? And like with brands, it's different, but definitely with like, I mean, a lot of brands in Ireland that we deal with have a lot of female led characters in the business, which is amazing, you know, and like it's great to work with people that have a lot of females on board. But again, a lot of the times key decision makers above them are men. And it's not that men hate women or whatever, but it's just that men tend to work with other men. And it's never something I've really talked about massively, but I do see it way more than I should. And it's difficult. Like I remember even I went to this business dinner before with all these like entrepreneurs and people from Harvard and all this kind of stuff, and I was like the only girl there. And I remember there's this guy there, he's like this millionaire investor, and we were all having chats or whatever. And I was about to go to the goth Christmas party, so I was wearing like a bright pink dress. It was like a staff party, but I was wearing a bright pink dress. It was kind of booby, so it was kind of random I was there, but I was kind of asked to pop in. But anyway, I started talking about something and this guy like interrupted me and went, sorry, I actually didn't even hear a word you said there. Like I was just staring at you, like, because you look gorgeous tonight. And he was like, is that really hard? Like, do you find it difficult for people to take you seriously? And I was like, oh my God, do you want me to wear a black sack for you to take me seriously? So over the years, like there's been a lot of comments among people in the industry and journalists and stuff like that like a lot of my photos are too revealing, and that like I put up stuff that's too sexy and stuff like that. But the more I hear that, the more I actually do it, because I'm actually like, I can be sexy, I can be a mother, I can be a homeowner, I can also be a CEO that is the best at what I do. It doesn't matter if I have boobs. Like, so when people say those things to me, it really pisses me off and it makes me do it more, which probably isn't the best thing. But I have definitely found that being a young girl, having good boobs, like they can take away, I suppose, people think that you're maybe not as serious as you should be. But I really fight against that. I'm not going to walk around in a blazer every day of my life just to make sure that men can take me seriously.
This is what I've always loved about you, is that you are like an anomaly, like in a sense that, like, you know, but you started Goss so young, and like I still see you as like so young, and just the fact that Goss has been so successful over the years, and yet like you're a young woman who is just being a young woman as well, you know? And there shouldn't be any, you know, like people should still take you seriously as a CEO. And then you should also be able to be a young woman
to your point, simultaneously it being a mother or being a homeowner or whatever it might be. And it's like the more people that they tell you, oh, you shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't wear that dress or you shouldn't, you know, whatever. Just because, even because maybe you have blonde hair. Like, I know I've come up against it as well. Like, you know, and like, you just makes you want to do it more. Like, and even going back to like Marissa, because I know the two of us know each other a lot because of Marissa. And she always used to, like, she dyed, I think she dyed her hair brown one time, like in when she had her business when she was very young, and her beauty salon. And she opened it and she started dyeing her hair brown. And, you know, Marissa's known for her like bright blonde hair. And like, you know, she loves girly outfits and she loves cute dresses. And that's just how she dresses. And she's always dressed. And I think she switched it up and tried to have people take her more seriously in a blazer and darker hair. And she was like, that's just not me, you know. And like, I've always remembered that. Yeah. And it wouldn't be yourself to be wearing a blazer.
And I did do that for a while. Like at the... A few months into Goss, I dyed my hair brown. And I remember actually when I was working for one of the newspapers, I dyed my hair brown only for like a few weeks. I kind of like tinted it. And I remember getting in an elevator and one of the kind of senior women actually in the company got in the elevator with me. And she was like, wow, you look so much more classy like that. And and I was like, right, I'm dyeing a peroxide blonde tomorrow. But it's funny, like an ex of mine, like literally only within the last year, he had like this massive issue with my image on social media. And it's again another reason that's really pushed me into doing this even more. But he always felt that like the photos which are revealing and that I should be, you know, he would like find old photos of me when I had long brown hair in a blazer. And he'd be like, you should be doing that. And he used to always be like, you should be more like Anna Wintour. And I was like, I don't want to be Anna Wintour. Like Anna Wintour sits behind sunglasses. You know, she has her role, which is fine. Like, I, like you, like, I know you want to have a really positive effect on young girls. I do as well. And, like, I really am, like, a post-feminist, which is, you know, the kind of feminism where you believe that you can do whatever you want with your body. It's yours. You're not sexualizing it for men. You're just, like, being who you are. And that's how I feel. And I really want to break down this whole ideology that like a woman can't be taken seriously unless she's in a blazer, she has long brown hair, her makeup isn't too much, her lips aren't too big, like she has to be the girl next door. Like it's the same even, you know, when guys are trying to find their wife, you know, like even I've had family members be like, would you not tone down your Instagram, you're going to attract the wrong guys. But again, like this is who I am as a person. Like I'm never going to change it. And having your own company, it really puts you in a position where you can do what you want with stuff like that. Like I had a run in before one of my editors because he thought my photos were too revealing. And at the time, I was like really embarrassed. And I remember like leaving the office bawling my eyes out. And he was like, you know, if these photos continue, like I'm sure there's a way we can get you out of your contract, basically, like you're going to be fired. And at the time, I was like really upset. And whatever. But I remember after I set up Goss, I remember talking to someone about it at the time and they were like, oh my God, that is so inappropriate that like they were looking at your personal photos and told you that basically you looked like a slapper and that they didn't want someone like that working for the company. And I was like, oh, I wish I could go back into that moment, because if someone now, again, post Me Too and all this, if someone now told me I don't like the look of your photos, I would literally be like, good luck. And this is the thing. When you've been through bad experiences, when you set up your own business, then you kind of have this like basis of things you're not going to do. And like, I would never take away someone's freedom of expression. And that's what social media is. But I do think there's a part of me that goes OTT with it. Like, I remember when Goss first started for the first year, you know this yourself from being in the industry, I went to like every event because I was like trying to network, trying to get the deals in, really wanted to put Goss on the map. So I wanted to even be pictured in a magazine that said, Goss.ie, Ali Ryan, blah, blah. But there was like people, WhatsApps going around saying that like I was an alcoholic and I was drinking too much. So then I went out of my way. What? I still do it now. Kendra laughs about it still. I don't know if people know this, but ever since that I saw the WhatsApp and I heard about this, if you look at any social pictures of me, I'm always holding a glass of Prosecco or wine. I make an effort to actually put them into photos now because it annoyed me so much. It's probably the wrong way to go about it, but I was like, do you know what? I am going to put this into every single photo for the rest of my life. Yeah. That's what I've been doing.
I think it's more like if somebody said to me, like, you know, you shouldn't be doing this or whatever, and it's got nothing to do with my capability of doing the job or,
you know, my performance. It's not going to affect my performance in any way. I'd be like, well, that's your problem. Like, I would be like, oh, that's, you know, that's your issue. So I would, we're very similar in that way. I never knew that. If somebody said to me, oh, don't be doing that, I'd be like, right, let's do it like 110%.
But again, that's the difference between, I don't know, I don't even know what that personality type is. But I was actually talking to my mum the other day. We were talking about just, because she always says to me, like, she can't get over how resilient I am because so many bad things have happened in different parts of my life. And I've always just kind of got back up and done it again. And the other day she was like, do you remember? So when I left I moved schools 3 times because of bullying, right? And the last school I moved from was a secondary school. And it was like my last week there. And I used to like write the school plays and perform and stuff because I sang and I danced and acted and all that stuff. And there was like a concert on the day that was meant to be my last day in school. And my mom was obviously like, do you know what? You don't have to do it. Because I was being horrendously bullied, you know? So she was like, you don't have to go up there. But she was like to me the other day, she's like, do you remember you got up and you did the whole performance and people were booing you at the start. And then by the end, everyone was clapping. And I was like, I actually forgot about that. And she was like, you made that decision on your own. You were like, I'm going up there and I'm performing, even though I didn't have to do it. So I've had this thing inbuilt into my brain. So I think actually the more negativity, the more doubters, the more begrudgers, it actually really pushes me to, again, prove everyone wrong. And it's probably unhealthy in a way, but I try to do the opposite of what people think I'm going to do. You know, I try to prove people that they're wrong. And I think I have. I know, I think even if Goss closed tomorrow, there's no one in this industry that would say Goss wasn't a success, because it has been a success. I know that. And the brand, you know how difficult it is. You've worked with lots of companies. Building a brand just as a brand, like forget about the money for a second, but building a reputation of a brand.
Yeah.
It's so difficult. And we literally did that from day one. Like Goss is such a well-known brand. The name alone, like I couldn't believe when that name was even available, like to buy a domain. I was like, what? Like, it's just the brand side of it has been perfect. So no one in this whole world could ever tell me that it's not been successful, because I know it has been. So
yeah, and you know that you've also put your blood, sweat and tears into it. Like, you know, if it was to close in the morning, which, you know, it's not, but you know that you've put your blood, sweat and tears into it. So like, yeah, there's nobody in the industry that could say that it wasn't a success, you know.
And that's to do with positive reinforcement. And this is why I find books like The Secret so good. Like, there is always going to be people that are against you or don't like you or are questioning you or don't think you're good enough. And you have to be able to, it always goes back to sleep. I'm such a bad sleeper sometimes, but you have to be able to lie in bed at night and be able to say, like, I am a good person. Like, I am doing a good job. I made the right decision. Sometimes they're tough decisions and sometimes it might piss people off. It might upset people. It might cause issues for people. But if you can go to bed at night and be like, I'm a good person. And I have never, ever, ever lied to bed at night and thinking I was a bad person. No matter what's happened, even if I felt guilty for things, I have never purposely hurt or upset anyone. I know that. My conscience is clear. Like, I know that. So I think being able to tell yourself that you're a good person and, you know, you're doing the best job you can, like, I think that's so important. And if you have that positive reinforcement from yourself, you don't really need it from other people. And I think you know this too, like being in New York, especially like when you're in this game, this rat race, you know, there isn't a lot of people that are going to be patting you on the back and telling you you're doing a good job. You really have to be able to do that for yourself.
Absolutely. Like there's barely anyone who will even say you did a good, and that's not, I'm not saying that I would look for that, but it's not on them. It's, you have to just take responsibility and say, yes, you know, I want to do this, or I know I've done a good job, and have integrity to say that, yeah, I've made the right decision, or I've done the right thing, you know, at the end of the day. I want to go back, because you talk about The Secret a lot. Is there any other books that you have read, or any other person that you look up to that you kind of get that similar inspiration from?
Yeah, there's a few. Like, I've gotten really into listening to podcasts, which I know you have as well, like over the last couple of years. So one book an author I love is Tim Ferriss. Do you read any of his stuff?
I know. Yeah, I've watched some of his stuff on YouTube. Yeah.
So he has a book called Tools of Titans, which is really good. It's this massive book. It's literally like a Bible, and each chapter is a different person. And it's basically the most successful people in the world. Like, it could be a swimmer, a poker player, an actress. And each chapter just, it tells you what they do every day. It sounds really boring, but they like explain what they do every day. Like, you know, their health routine, their meditation. And they give these key lessons from their life. Like, if they could give advice to anyone. So that's like a really good book. Oprah Winfrey, I'm obsessed with. Like, What I Know for Sure, that book is so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, it's a lot of positive reinforcement. And then even just listening to people, like, I love Brené Brown. Do you know her? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, love her as well.
Yeah, her whole talk about vulnerability, her TED talk, if you look that up, it's so good. But she also has a podcast now as well. I love listening to like Sheryl Sandberg. And then obviously, I suppose, yeah, looking up to people, Sheryl Sandberg, Arianna Huffington, especially, I suppose, because it's kind of similar. She started Huffington Post, Michelle Obama, Tony Robbins as well. I love Tony Robbins. Anyone that like when I ever fly to LA, I always download like Tony Robbins and Tim Ferriss podcasts. And then I listen to them the whole way there on like a 15-hour flight, because they interview really inspirational people. And I learn so much. Like, they just talk to business owners who started from nothing. And when you hear that people that are now like billionaires, millionaires, went through similar things to you, it gives you so much hope and so much like Richard Branson, for example, right? I really like him. And his book is so good, because his two books, he talks about things that like people don't even realize happened. Like, so many businesses of his failed, like so many things went wrong. And like, it's a lot of stuff that doesn't really get spoken about. Sometimes it's all like, oh, just believe it and it will happen. But also, I had to fire 10 staff and I went bankrupt. Like, you have to go into that stuff as well. But definitely recently, the main thing I've kind of been focused on is Oprah Winfrey's Super Soul Sunday podcast. Have you listened to that?
Yeah, I mean, anything that Oprah touches, like, I will absolutely like.
And the thing is, it's not even about her. It's about the people she has on and the conversations she has. And then also, if anyone's looking for something inspirational, I'm obsessed with the Steve Jobs connecting the dots speech. Have you watched that on YouTube?
No, I'm like, I have Brené Brown here. I'm going to be looking up these. Okay, so Steve Jobs.
Connecting the dots. You will absolutely love it. It's probably the most profound speech I've ever seen in my whole life. And I remember, was it like 2 or 3 years into GOSS? A really good friend of mine is basically like a business mentor to me as well. I was having a really tough time. Things were just like wrecking my head. I think it was after that sale of the business had fallen through and everything. And I was like, oh, and he was like, go watch Steve Jobs' commencement speech, Connecting the Dots. And it's just this incredible speech about, he talks about crazy things that happened in school and in college, like way before Apple was created and stuff. And he just talks about all these mental weird things that happened. Like, I think, for example, he got kicked out of a college class or something didn't happen in a course, and he had to take like calligraphy, like a random class. But then when he went to set up the Apple, like, he's the one that created all the fonts. And like, those fonts have now been copied by every major computer company in the world. Like, all the fonts you see is because he had taken a calligraphy course and he knew all the fonts. So it's this whole speech about, and it's really emotional. And he just goes through all these low points in his life. And then he says, like, if you just connect the dots, like, you'll realize that all these incredibly difficult, challenging things that happened, they were leading to these like amazing things. And I suppose for me, that's one of the biggest things I've learned, because I have been dealt like so many blows personally, professionally. And like I said, my own mother sometimes is like, I just don't know how you get back up again sometimes. But it is this belief that I have. There's things that have happened that I know if they didn't happen that way, as bad as they were, like going back to that phone call being screamed at 5 a.m. when bad things like that hadn't happened, I don't know would I be where I am now. So the reason I love that speech is he really goes into it. And like, there's a lot of people that face way worse things than I have, like, God. So it's good to watch it and just give yourself hope that like everything is happening for a reason. And I do genuinely believe that. I believe you can control your destiny, but I do also think that things happen on purpose. And even if you can't see it at the time, in a couple of years, like, one of the biggest examples for me, I always say this to people, is like, I remember I was telling you, I moved schools, I started getting straight A's, everything was going well. Law was my first choice. I did my mocks and I got like 490. I was like flying it. I was like, bam, bam, bam. Yeah, I was like, grand, I've got this in the bag. And then 3 days before my leaving cert, I got diagnosed with diabetes, like out of the blue, out of nowhere, no history of it. I was so sick. Like, I was meant to have to do my leaving cert in the hospital. They had like educators, like all organized to come out. And I was like, no, this is like resilient Ali. I was like, I'm getting out of here. I'm going to learn how to use injections on my own. I'm doing it. Like, you normally stay in for a week and the nurses teach you. I was like, I'm done. I'm getting out of here. So I went out and I did it. But like your concentration levels are so bad at the beginning when you first get it. And like it's hard to see and stuff. And I remember going into, I think it was my history exam. And I just sat there for the first half an hour just being like, oh my God, like, what am I doing? So anyway,
were you just like, were you confused or like you just didn't know?
It was a mixture of things. Like I went into my maths exam thinking it was Irish, and then they wouldn't let me get a calculator because it had started. So I failed. Like, this is the thing I was saying where things happen for a reason, right? So I failed I failed one paper in past maths. So I passed past maths, but I got like a D1 in it. So basically what happened was when I got my results, like my mom and everyone was like, you've had the worst summer ever. You're going to get your points. Don't worry. And law and European studies was 420 the year before. So, or was it 430? Yeah, it was 430, I think. So I got my results, counted them, and I got 420. So they were 10 points lower. And I remember like coming out of the steps of tutorial and literally collapsing on the steps, bawling and crying. Like, it was like when you're about to vomit. I was like coming out the door. I was like, don't cry, don't cry. Like all the parents were outside and I literally collapsed on the steps. I was so upset. And then when like my prospectus came, basically because I had only got a D1 in past maths, my two other choices as well as law. So my first three choices were all gone because to do business, which is what my second and third choice was, you have to get a C1 in maths or higher. So all of a sudden, my three choices were taken away, and number four was English and media. And I was just like, oh, I actually don't even know if I want to do this. The prospectus came in the post, and I remember I started bawling, crying, and my mom was like, just don't go, like take a year out. And I was like, no, if I take a year out, I will never go to college. I just know the way I am, I have to just go straight in. But now, so this is, I always tell the story because I was so upset, why me, life is so hard, blah blah blah. Like, that is what started the whole path to where I am now. Like, if I had done law, I never would have worked in a newspaper during college. I never would have worked in a radio station during college. All my friends that ended up in that law degree, when we came out of college in 2010, was it? The recession was in full blow. So people that I knew that did the law degree ended up working in iPhone insurance companies and call centers. There was no jobs. Whereas I had a job in the Herald before I sat my first exam in UL. So
yeah,
this is why I always try to talk to people around time, the leaving cert as well. Like at the time, I felt like it was so unjust. But yeah, like, the thing is, there is a way into everything. And I sometimes joke with my family, like, I don't know what to believe in, whether it's God or the universe, but like I was heading down the wrong path and someone was like, right, we need to stop this. And I really think that's why I got diabetes, because I know I would have got those points, no problem. Like I know I would have, I was doing so well. But I suppose the lack of concentration, the maths, like if I hadn't got that D1 in maths, if I had just got one grade higher, I think it was C3 is what I needed, I would have ended up doing business. But then I never would have had the media background. So like there's, if I look back at that time, I was miserable. I hated the world. I was like, why me? But now I'm like, it's actually the best thing that ever happened. So that's what I try to feel when things are going wrong. And same, I suppose, going back to your earlier question, when things are going bad, I'm just always like, it's fine. Like things will work out. And I always ask the question as well, when people tell me they're really troubled or they're upset or they're worried, I'm always like, what is the worst thing can happen, right? Tell me right now, what's the worst thing? And I remember when GOS started, I remember thinking to myself, the worst thing is I have no money, I have to leave my apartment and I have to move back in with my mom. And then I was like, if that happened, it's actually not that bad. When you actually go to what the worst thing is, it's not that bad. And when you actually realize that your biggest fear is not that bad, it gives you confidence to start taking more risks and to start just believing it's all going to be fine. Because for you, for example, right, what do you think could be the worst thing that would happen to you right now?
Oh, well, like nearly every week I talk to my mom and I'm like, well, if it doesn't work out, I'll just come home. And I'm like, I've thought about coming back to Dublin so many times because of like the whole visa situation, the jobs, everything has to line up to keep you here. And like, you can't be in New York without a steady amount of money coming in. So like that, it's so shaky, because if I get let go in the morning, I have to return home to Dublin. My visa is gone. Like if they fire me, my visa is gone. And people don't realize the intricacies of what it takes to maintain a life out here. And I've lived like that I've lived like this way for 4 years, knowing that like if I got fired in the morning, that I would be back home in Dublin living with my parents. Like, so that makes you work really, really hard to prove yourself, to make yourself, you know, it's just vital to the business, you know? So, but then, you know, I can deal with going back. If I got fired, who gives a shit? You know, I don't care. Like, I'll put it on my Instagram. Like, I don't care if I get fired. Why? Because I know that I did my absolute best. Yeah. And I know that it's not a reflection on me. So I'm able to cope with that. And I'm able to go, all right, well, that didn't work out. Good luck. See ya.
Yeah, do you know the way there's that saying I always see on Instagram? It's like, better a what if than an oops. Or mm-hmm. Is it better an oops than a what if? Yeah, sorry, better an oops than a what if. So basically, it's better to take the risk than to always wonder. And I've always felt like that. Like, even I think about people that have like midlife crises or like, you know, marriages that fall apart and stuff. And it's always a really similar pattern. And a lot of it, I always find, is people didn't like follow their dreams, or like they didn't take the risk that they wanted to do a new job, and they start resenting their partner and there's all this stuff. I know if tomorrow I like found my true love and got pregnant, like in the morning, I would never wonder what if. I would never be like, oh, I wish I traveled, I wish I this. I did all that. Like, I have mental situations. Stories, like stories that like I can tell my grandchildren, like stories that the general public, I haven't even said things to you, like mad situations with celebrities and over the top situations, you know. And
I think amazing. I've met you, I think I've seen you more in LA than I've seen you in Dublin. Like,
I know. Like, we were saying that before we did the podcast when we started there. Like, I was meant to be living there at the moment, like for the whole summer, and that's been a big plan for me. And we actually set up a Goss sister website called LA Goss about 3 years ago. We did it as a trial, so we did a 6 month trial in LA. I hired staff out there just to see how it all go, and it went so well and I loved it. And there's definitely a place for us there. There's actually, and a lot of people wouldn't believe that, you know, there's space for Goss in Hollywood, but there really, really is a market there for us. But my kind of aim was like, get back here, build up the funds to launch it over there massively, and like do a full office out there and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of what we were working towards this year. Now it's like all up in the air. I don't know what's going to happen.
But I really see that. And I've kind of, you know, you've talked about that before you even launched the LA, you know, wing or version of the business, that you've always wanted to do that. So I think even through this tough time with coronavirus and, you know, whatever happens after, I think that you will always gravitate towards that, and you might do it in a way that, you know, that you can. I think, like, even if it doesn't mean that you have to shift your whole life over there, or, you know, that you will.
I've always loved the idea of like living there 6 months, living here 6 months. And there's been a few years where I've spent, when I look over the year, at least like 3.5 months there, where I've been there for so long. And like, a lot of people over there think I'm so happy there, and they'll be like, you belong here. And I am more myself over there. But that's the thing, like, this is the funny thing about this industry, and I know you know this as well. Like, when I started going to LA, I remember everyone being like, oh, like, you know, they're vultures in Hollywood and it's all backstabbing, blah, blah. I honestly think it's bitchier in Dublin. Like, I have more friends, like, more supportive people in an industry environment in LA than I
being do. I'm obviously not in LA, but being out in America, being out in New York, in a very, very competitive city, and Hollywood is a totally different ballgame, but like, 100%. I would be terrified to go back to Dublin. I'd be like, oh, here we go. Because it's just like, it is.
So small.
Yeah. And it's that unfortunate begrudgery. And I think it's just comes with being in a small country or a small city. Like, whereas in New York, like, they don't have that begrudgery. They don't, like, they think they're the business. And if that you're good at something, like, you scream it, like, from the rooftops. Like, so.
It's the exact same in LA. This is the thing. Yeah. Like, you could go into a party and be like, I am a surgeon and a clown and a movie director. And everyone would be like, oh my God, unreal. Here, like, because I act as well. I am always terrified to tell anyone I've been in anything. Because, like, I did this film that was, like, aired on RTE last year. And I remember being like, oh, here we go. Like, there's going to be so much talk over this. Like, there's definitely going to be like, who does she think she is? Blah, blah, blah. I didn't even want to talk about it. But then in LA, I can be like, oh, I run this business and I'm going to launch a business here. And I'm hoping to get more into acting over here. And I've written this film script. And people are like, oh my God, I should connect you to Dave. Like, he knows Mark and he's going to help you with this. Everyone's like, how can we help you? And I just don't think people believe that it's like that there. But I think it's probably the same in New York in a way. If you're good at what you do, and this is the one thing, right? And I feel like you're the same as me. when I was in school and I was being bullied and all the stuff, I could never understand like what it was all about. And I remember my mum at the time being like, oh, like people are jealous of you and they're trying to take you down to their level because they're not happy. They don't want you to be happy. And I started to be like, why would they be jealous of me? Like, but I was very, very confident in school. Like I was in a mixed school. I could go up and talk to any guy. I had natural blonde hair. I was singing in the choir. I was like performing on stage. I had all these things that obviously screams like confidence. But the difference between someone like me and someone like that who has to tear you down to feel better, if I see someone doing really well, I'm like, I want to learn from you. Like, I want to understand how you got there. I want to help you go further. And I want to, you know, I want you to be my mentor. I want to understand this. I want to be you. I want to, like, you know, use your life's template. Whereas there's another way of thinking, which is, I want to take you down. I don't want you to be better than me. I hate myself, so you're going to hate yourself too. And it's something I've never understood. And I've never, ever, ever been a jealous person. And especially when it comes to business, like the likes of Marissa, like when you were saying earlier, who'd you look up to? Like, I would hugely look up to Marissa and what she's achieved from nothing. Like, I see someone like her and I'm like, I want to pick her brain. I'm not like, I want to take her down. So like,
no, I think we can all be successful. And Marissa being successful doesn't knock, like people can browse goss.ie, but they can also browse E! News and Hollywood Life. And they can also browse these other websites. And there's a piece of the pie for everybody. People who use one beauty product doesn't mean they only use one. They can use other beauty products as well. You know, like there's a piece of the pie out there for everybody.
And that's a huge problem that you just touched on there. Like, I personally feel there's a massive disconnect between a lot of the media brands that, like, they don't want to, you know, like, there's multiple publications, I won't even name them, that, like, don't ever publish photos from the gossies because they've been told not to. So, like, it's such a big thing. Like, it happens in two specific publications. But I'm just like, why would mentioning the word gossies devalue your business? Like, we should all be speaking to each other and have a relationship because we're all up against each other in these boardrooms with advertisers. Like, let's band together. But there's this whole feeling, like what you just said there, like it doesn't bother me tagging another website, but for some reason it does bother others. And it goes back to that same mentality. It's fear, it's being self-conscious. This isn't a business way, but like it's the same things. If you were confident in your business, confident in your partnerships and your clients, why does it matter that a 24-year-old girl has a laptop and is starting a website? Like, this is what the thing is. Like, when I was threatened to be sued that time, I remember being like, this is just silly. Like, it's actually just showing their cards. Like, they're worried. They're so worried this is going to be better than what they've done. And it was. And it is. Like, you know, they were right to be worried about it. But that's what annoys me, though, I have to say. I'll never understand that way of thinking. And I've never felt that way. I've never looked at someone being like, oh, like people could look
same,
at me.
I'm Stephanie. The same.
People could look at you and be like, I really want to go to New York. Oh my God. Like, I'd love to work in PR over there. That's the dream. Like, they should message you and be like, oh my God, you've any time. Like, I'm just, you know, I really have an interest. Maybe you won't message back. Maybe you're busy, but that's the route I would take. Whereas someone else will screenshot your Instagram, put it in a WhatsApp and bitch about you. And that is the difference. The girl who bitches about you will never book the flight to New York. But the girl that messages you, maybe she won't hear back. I guarantee you she's in New York in the next 3 years. And that is the difference between being a success and not being a success. And like, you can be a success in smaller jobs as well. Don't get me wrong. It takes just as much a risk to move to New York as it might be for someone to teach a class. Like, it's different for different people. But I think you have, like, you only live once. I really think you have to do what you really want to do, even if at the end of it, it didn't work out and you're like, crap. Like I was saying to you, like, I think even if you did move back tomorrow, you have the most stellar CV now. You've like all these things. There's probably skills that you've learned that you honestly don't even realize until you're going to be put into another position that's nothing to do with what you're doing right now. So everything matters. Everything is worth it. You know, like even when I was in college, I went on a J1 in the first summer. It was so good. My first summer in J1. But none of my sisters went on theirs. Like, they just wanted to stay at home. They wanted to do the normal thing, you know, be around their boyfriends, all that kind of stuff. I was like, oh, I want to get out and like live somewhere. And like, I loved it. Loved every second of it. Like, it taught me so much about myself. So that's the way I just kind of am in my brain. I'm like, take the risks, spend the money, buy the shoes, like, do all these things. Because life
live,
is short.
Live, basically.
Live. Yeah.
That's like the theme of the podcast. Just live.
Just live. Like, I think, and isn't it, I'm forgetting quotes now, but is it like, important people discuss important things and dumb people discuss people, or something like that? I should know these
quotes.
Like,
I just can't. I it's been so many years, like maybe since I was a teenager, that I actually like set up and like chatted about somebody else, you know, like I'd be like, geez, how do they do that now? Or like, you know, I'd be curious to see, like, and that's part of the reason why I started the podcast, because I was like, there's so many people out there who are successful, are doing things that I could learn something from, or like that people, whoever is listening to this, could learn something from as well, like, and to give them a platform to talk about it and to bring awareness to these things. Because I'm a true, and I believe in my heart and soul that it's just about a series of decisions that you make and about taking risks and sacrifices and everything else. And it's just trying to get that point across. It's the, like, passion behind that. But like, people, I don't know any people who still sit up and talk about others, or, you know, even all your examples about people unfortunately trying to bring you down in different ways. Mm. It's just, to me, that's baffling. Like, bonkers. You know,
it is kind of the industry in a way, though. It's just, showbiz is a bitchy industry, and then journalism is quite bitchy as well. So it is just a bit of a bitchy industry. But yeah, another thing I think that's key as well for growth in general and success is just being open to learning from other people. And like, a lot of entrepreneurs would say, like, never be the smartest person in the room. Like, hire people that know stuff that you literally don't know. Like,
absolutely. Yeah.
And I really agree with that. And I love learning from other people. Like, I go to this like business dinner every year now where I just meet these other entrepreneurs, and like, I learn so much by like mistakes that they've made, successes they've made, and I'm open to learning, and I'll listen to them, and I'll literally, like, you're dead right. Might not always agree in my mind, but I do listen, and I do think it's important to listen to people. And even the girls in work and stuff, like, sometimes they'll say things to me and I'll kind of off the bat be like, no. But I'll go home that night and I'll just think that through again. And then I might come in the next day and be like, okay, let's do that. So sometimes it takes me a while, but I'll always consider everything that's said to me. And it's such an important thing, even just as a person, let alone as a business person. Like, if your friends are saying something to you that you don't really like, I think it's important to listen. So listening is good, and it's kind of the number one thing to do, even in a sales environment. And I'm sure you know that too, like, listening to clients, listening to brands, listening
absolutely
to customers.
Yeah,
it's important, but it can be a really difficult thing for someone to put their own ego aside and listen. But I do think it's one of the things I've learned. And even listening just to a podcast like the Oprah one, or listening to Tim Ferriss, just sitting down for a while and listening to other people. Like, I think there's so much to learn, and no one has all the answers, and you just have to kind of keep educating yourself. Because, like, if you think about it, when we were in school or we were in college, we were learning something every day, whereas now it's like life is what teaches us. So you still have to find ways to educate yourself in some way, even if it is just listening to a podcast or reading a book, or listening on Audible. I don't think people read anymore. Like, do people read books?
I don't know. I think they do. I think it's, I really appreciate that, like, to stay very curious about other things and other ways that people do, because we're all wired so differently, and there's so many different ways to do the same thing, you know? I love that.
And I love podcasts, especially with just like random people. Like, that's why I like the Oprah one, because sometimes she's like huge celebrities, and the other times it's like Pastor James, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, who? But then I listen to it and I'm like, I'm not massively religious or anything, but I'll still take something away from it. And I'll be like, yeah, actually, you know, one of the best things I've ever listened to on Oprah. Oh my God, I listen to it all the time. It's more to do with like relationships, but it's basically the episode where it's about, when people show you who they are, believe them. It's this whole, it's like a kind of combination of different episodes of the Oprah show. It's on a podcast. I'll send it to you if you haven't heard it, but it's more so about relationships, I suppose, than business. But it's kind of this whole idea that, like, let's say you meet a bad boy and they basically are giving all the signs that they're a bad person, like they are not good for you, but you just keep putting yourself out there, you keep trying to change it. Same with like a friend or a business situation, you just keep going back and trying to fix it. The whole episode is just about, you have to listen. And it's again with listening, listen to what people are telling you. Like if you're in a workplace and your boss is not being nice to you, like they've shown you who they are,
who they are, yeah,
like
you'll have to send that to me and I'll put it in the description box.
So good, because like you said, right, if you're in a bad job but you have an end date and it's a plan, stay there. If you're in a bad job and this is your life, you need to get out. Like you can't. And that's the thing, when someone shows you their true colors, that's it, you accept it. And I'm such a positive person, I always try to see the good in people. So that podcast really made me realize, like, no, like you have to listen to your gut instincts. And if something looks bad, and even going back to that business deal, like I always tell my family about this, like when we did Nearly Sell Goss, one of the meetings was in New York. Like we were flown out to New York and the deal was basically done in a restaurant there. And I was outside, took a photo. It's like, it's a really nice photo that I have. And I was wearing like my favorite hairband. Went to the airport to fly home, and I got to the airport and the person at the desk was like, oh, your flight was like accidentally cancelled. Like your seat, like the flight is here, but your seat was like accidentally cancelled. We have to rebook you. And I remember my heart nearly jumped out of my body. I was like, this is like a bad sign. And I was like, okay, no, I need to calm down. It's fine. It's fine. So the flight got rebooked. I got on the flight. Then I got off the plane and I was in my car and my mum rang me and she was like, how did you get on? And I was like, yeah, it was good. And then I realized I left my hairband on the plane. It's like my favorite hairband.
No way.
And I was like to my mum, I was like, oh God, no, I have a bad feeling about this deal. I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're going to mess me around. I have a bad feeling. And she was like, why? Because you left your hairband on the plane. And I was like, I'm telling you. And I was so right about that situation. And I look back at so many things where I felt that pang, that, you know, that feeling in your gut where something's not right. And it's why I like the podcast, because they kind of tell you, lean into that emotion and accept it and trust it and make decisions based on it. I'm very bad at like listening to myself. I'll just be like, oh no, it's fine. But
yeah, I was dead
right about that.
We almost have like this sixth sense that we do have an intuition that we have to listen to. Like, and again, I know the two of us are not very airy-fairy in that kind of sense of like spirituality or religion or anything. And I'm not really necessarily talking about that, but I do think that we have an innate kind of intuition to say, there's something not adding up here, or there's something, and we have to learn to listen to that.
Yeah. And I think it takes time. It's the same kind of question about like, how do I stay calm? Like I really listen to my instincts now. And like I turned 30 this year, and I remember always hearing people being like, when you turn 30 you just like get so much comfortable with your body and better decision making. I remember like, yeah, but I swear the last 12 months I've totally calmed down and I have listened to my instincts way more than I would have before. And I've just accepted my body. I've accepted so many things that I would have struggled with in the past. It's really strange, but it is definitely to do with age and experience. And I wish I could understand what the formula is to how I've got so calm and how I've felt so confident again. It just kind of happened, but it does happen. And I think it's a lot of, like I said, positive reinforcement, like whether it's The Secret or it's Oprah Winfrey or it's just something, like I think everyone should find something. Maybe it's a guided meditation, but if you start introducing positive thoughts into your day all the time, like one of the big things my mom is really big on that I have become really big on is gratitude.
Yeah.
And like journaling gratitude. And I don't even know if she does it anymore, but she used to always say to me, like, be grateful for the little things. So sometimes if I was going through a rough time, I'd be like, I am so lucky that my family are healthy. Like, I am so lucky that I have a roof over my head. I'm so lucky that my fridge is full of food. And when you start saying all these things, and Oprah's a big fan of this as well, when you list, let's say, five good things, it is impossible to feel negative. When you have these five core things, whether it's like, I'm so happy the sun was out today, it can be really tiny. You actually set up your whole day in a better way. So when I'm good at practicing this mantra, like I'll get up in the morning, won't look at my phone, put the kettle on, make my coffee, make my bed. If you read that Tim Ferriss book, Tools of Titans, literally every successful billionaire makes their bed in the morning. It's so weird. But you make my bed. And then sometimes I'll just literally talk to myself and I'd be like, I'm so lucky. Like, I am so happy. I'm this. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, you can't do it every day. And some days I wake up being like, I'm miserable. I don't want to get out of bed. So it doesn't happen all the time. But if you can just slowly introduce that way of thinking to your life over time, you do see results. And like, there's so many cases. Like, what I like about The Secret actually is there's a lot of case studies in it. So like, there's one story, for example, about this guy. He was a pilot and he crashed a plane, and they basically were like, you're never going to be able to walk again. You know, you need to accept this new way of living, blah, blah, blah. And he said that he laid there, I think it was like September or October when it happened. He said he laid there in the hospital bed and he kept telling himself, I am going to walk out of here by Christmas. I'm going to walk out of here by Christmas. He just kept saying it to himself. And then he did. He walked out there by Christmas. So there is, even medical geniuses would say, there is such a connection between how you think and how your body works. And that's why holistic therapies and all that, you know, it does kind of work. If you can feel positive, think positive, you're going to be less sick. You're going to be less negative overall. Like, I'd really think you can see huge results if you just feel happy. But look, it's not that easy, obviously.
It's not, but it's also your responsibility as a you have to take responsibility, and you know, it's up to you to kind of navigate that. And it takes action to get up and make your bed. It takes action to put on a podcast that you is going to motivate you. It takes action to do all that kind of stuff as well. So you have to have that kind of desire to say, I can do this. Like, I've decided to do better. Cause like, there's days, especially like in quarantine, there's days that will go by that I'll just be like, oh, like, for God's sake. But then all that it'll take is like, I'll hear a whisper of like Oprah Winfrey's voice and I'm like, oh,
you're I'm like, back. Hallelujah. Like,
yeah. Like, I'm back. Like, and I lose sight of those things that like kind of keep me on track, and I know what I have to do to get myself back there. And it's a constant ownership of your mindset. Yeah, it's a constant work.
It's like exercise. There's actually an image I've seen online that I love. I've shared it a good few times over the years, and like, it's this guy on a bus, and on one side of the bus is like hell, fires, destruction, and on the other side it's like sunshine, and it says on it, happiness is a choice. And I remember when I found that, I was like, God, it's so profound. Like, it's so true. You can wake up in the morning and decide to focus on all the shit things that are happening. I'm in quarantine, I haven't seen my family, like, business is difficult. Like, you can think of all these things, or you can get up and be like, I have a roof over my head. Things are going to be fine. Let's put on this podcast. I'm going to go for a walk. God, it's a beautiful day. It is a choice, and it's a difficult one. Like, I'm definitely not saying it's easy, like, but there is definitely, like you said, there's a choice there. If you can go to the gym and work out your muscles, you can get up in the morning and work out your mental health. Like, you can focus on it, you can work on it, you can meditate, you can put the phone down, you can eat well. There's all these things you can do to be proactive and to take action, like you're saying, the same way you would if you were on a football pitch. Or if you're in the office, if you're proactive at anything in life, you can be proactive with yourself. Yeah. But obviously with all that's going on, I'm so aware that like, mental health is like, it's a lot of people are struggling. Like, people that wouldn't have struggled with mental health, I've seen them struggle throughout this.
Yeah.
So like, I know it's not easy, but like, hopefully even if one person takes away from this, like, that there can be that decision in your mind in the morning. And making your bed, I don't know what it's about. I read it before in a book, and then I saw it in another book and another book and another book. Then I started hearing it on podcasts, and it was all these like really wealthy people. And they were saying, it's just kind of proven that if you have this little routine in the morning, like, I think the quote is like, if you can make your bed, you can take over the world. So if you get up and you do this little task and you do it right and you do it well, the rest of your day is going to go smoothly, basically. Like, if you can just get yourself together. So I've started doing that now. I get up, I make my bed. And there's some days I get up, I'm in the worst mood, I'm like, oh, and I'm still like, Ali, make your bed, make your bed, make your bed. And then I do.
Yeah. So. Yeah, no, it's true. You have to do it. You have to listen. You have to talk yourself into it, you know. And one thing my dad always says as well, he's like, take the emotion out of the motion. So like, if I'm going to work out or whatever, like, I just literally strip away all those thoughts of what I'm feeling. It's like, you can think about all these emotions around, oh, I don't want to do this, don't want to do that, or I feel this way, I feel that. And my dad's just like, take the emotion out of the motion and just fucking go and do
just
it. Like,
do it. Yeah, there's someone, I can't remember who it is, but there's this idea called like the 5-second rule. I don't know if you've heard of it, where it's basically like, if you're getting up in the morning, or you have to go to the gym, or you have to go to the shower, you literally count down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you just do it. There's no thinking, there's no dwelling. You if you feel like you're if you're like feeling really down, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you get up and you move. You have to do something in the 5 seconds, and it's such a good idea. And I've tried it myself a few times. Like, if I'm getting frustrated, I'm like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, up, and I'm doing another task. So I love that idea where your dad's saying it's the same kind of thing. You just take the thinking out of it for a few seconds or a minute, go and do what you have to do, and you will feel better. Like, being alone,
you feel confident
in your mind,
you feel better. Yeah, and it instills confidence in yourself to say, I know that I can do that, you know, like, because you don't have as much doubt going forward with yourself going, oh, I don't know if I'd be able to cope with that or whatever. But if you teach yourself how you can get around these things and how you can overcome it, it brings confidence in yourself, which is obviously really important.
And that's the thing, like, whether it's you can get yourself into an Oscars party, or you can get the job that you want, or you can get the guy that you want, when you start to realize how possible things that seemed so impossible actually are, you kind of become a superhero. You're literally like, you know what, like, there's
it
nothing.
Becomes very fun, doesn't it?
Yeah, you're just like, nothing is impossible. There is nothing in this whole world, like, even like, you know, when it comes to like customer care, if there's like an issue with your phone bill, or you're trying to renew something and someone tells me on the phone like, oh, I can't do that, I'm always like, yeah, you can. And I used to work in customer care, and I know from customer care as well that everything can be fixed and everything can be credited and all this kind of stuff. So I say I'm so annoying when I ring anywhere. I'm always like, but you can do this, you can just press the button, like, you can do that,
do it.
And it genuinely, that way of thinking has got me so far.
We don't want anyone to lose their jobs, but we're just saying as an example.
Yes, no, just as an example. But it's just a way of thinking, I suppose. It's just a way of thinking that anything you put your mind to, you can achieve. Like, it's a basic thought, but there is no one in the world that has made me rethink that. I've never heard a story of someone who's like been very positive, tried hard, worked, and hasn't really got to where they're meant to be. Or if they got let down, they ended up in a much better position in the end. So what the bad things were, they happened for a reason. So I still really, really believe that.
Yeah, I know, me too. Well, oh my God, I can't believe it's been so long.
I know, sorry, I talked so much.
Literally been, this is an example of something that will refresh me and will get me going now. I'm kind of already thinking of little ideas and nuggets of what to take out of this. So I hope anybody who's listening is also feeling that energy from you and like listening to all the stories. It's a really great example of something that will motivate you, and you just speak so truthfully about, yeah, I hear, like, I've been through it, I hear what you're saying, and it can get really shit, but it also can come full circle as well. So definitely loads of value in that. But yeah, appreciate you coming on, and you also have a podcast with Goss as well, so if anybody wants to hear more from you in the form of podcasts, I know you have that available as well.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks, Ali.